Overbooked and Opinionated is a book club for adults. We are adults who say adult things about adult books. We talk about sexy time and we say bad words, so please be mindful of anyone who might be listening alongside you. Content warnings can be found in the episode description. All right, on to the episode before the word adult loses all meaning.
Don't make me
Welcome to
Overbooked and Opinionated,
your favorite best friend book club podcast
with Liz
and Pooh
and Gammy.
Yes.
Who let her in here? Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. We have our first very special guest on the podcast. Is anybody else freaking out?
No, is it
I'm
just
freaking
me?
Out.
Okay. I guess, would you like to introduce yourself? Maybe explain who you are?
Sure. Hi, everybody. Hi, readers. My name is Inez Johnson. I write kissing books. And I met these lovely ladies when I was in Pennsylvania in a Barnes & Noble, and they were just so delightful, and now I'm so excited that one, they remembered me, and two, I'm get to be a part of this podcast.
Oh my goodness.
Of course we remembered you. We're obsessed with you.
Absolutely. I can't wait to pick up the rest of your books too. We'll talk about those in a little bit.
Oh yeah.
Oh my goodness, I'm excited. So Inez, can you tell us what your favorite genre is, your favorite literary genre?
It is fantasy, be it contemporary fantasy, otherworld fantasy, fantasy with paranormal elements. I love a love story that has some kind of magic in it. That's my happy place.
Amazing. Nice. I'm right there with you. That's awesome.
I know. Same. That's what the whole podcast is about. Crazy.
Yeah. That's great.
Crazy, guys. Crazy.
Yeah. So, yeah. Sorry.
No, you're good. Go ahead. I was just going to ask, do you have a favorite romance trope?
Marriage and convenience, really any kind of forced proximity where they they're stuck together and they can't escape each other and they have to work it out, which mostly relates to marriage of convenience. Like if you tell me marriage of convenience on a spaceship, I'm there. Historical in a carriage, I'm there. Underwater in a submarine, on a road trip, on the family ranch, I don't care. I'm there.
Awesome.
Amazing.
I love that, actually.
Uh-huh.
Oh, my goodness.
So here for that. I love a good marriage trope.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, I feel like a lot of Pooh's books are mafia, forced romance.
Well, I feel like most of the mafias are forced.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's like
it's good.
From, you know, two important families or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they have to work it out. Like, not only do they have to work it out, but she's often some kind of like an innocent, and he's not.
Yes.
And they have to figure it out.
We love that. We love that. Oh my goodness. Mm-hmm. Do you guys have another question?
Yeah. So we asked a bunch of questions for our intro episode just to get to know each other better. So what would you say is your favorite literary character of all time?
Of all time?
I know.
I keep what's called a hero inventory. And right now there are three, my top three.
Yeah. Give it to us.
Dragos Culebre from Thea Harrison's Dragonbound.
Ooh. Oh,
yes, there is Reese Winterbourne from Marion Winterbourne by Lisa Kleypas.
Okay.
And there's Vlad Tepes. I always mix up the name of Janine Frost's books, but it's the one that came after. And see, I just know the character's name. It's the one that came after Cat and Bones.
Okay. That's okay.
I don't remember the names of any of these books.
That's okay. That's my goodness. I love
those are my top three. Yeah.
The heroes list of the top three. She had them ready to go.
Oh yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
Oh,
they are my favorite. So like I'm always, whenever I'm writing and say I get stuck on the hero's motivation, I'm like, you know, this is either Vlad, Reese, or Dragos. So what would one of them
be? That's awesome.
I love that. That's such a good callback. I love that. Constantly going back.
Alrighty, so our last question for you before we dive into like the real interview questions.
Oh, this is the warm up. Oh my gosh,
this is the warm up. This is the beginning of the chaos.
Yeah.
What would you say is the most influential book that you've ever read? So a book that's changed you in some way.
Well, I have a tattoo of one of the seagulls in the book Jonathan Livingston Seagull, which I read in my high school English class. And I used to get it. It's so funny. I'm looking at my bookshelf and the book is like outward facing. Oh, and I think the cover is what I have up tattooed on my back is of a seagull. One, I'm from Annapolis, Maryland. There are seagulls everywhere. But the opening line of the book is it talks about in the morning, Jonathan Livingston Seagull was practicing. And it's amazing tale about this seagull who thought he was only supposed to do like just fly and hunt for fish, but he wanted to do these tricks in the air. He wanted to be more than what he was born to be. And that was just me. I've always just like, okay, what next? What can I do more? How can I get better? Oh, that's just how I was just hardwired when I came into this world. And so that is the book, I guess, that changed me.
Oh my God. That's amazing. That is so beautiful. It I have like really chills.
I we're going to have to look into this one. I don't know.
I have to read it. I have to read it.
It's a tiny little book.
That's perfect. Yeah,
it's been an hour.
Oh my God.
It actually kind of sounds similar to the one you mentioned in that question with Skippy John Jones.
Skippy John Jones. Yeah. So my Simpson. Yes. When I was young, I read the book Skippy John Jones, which is about like this little Siamese cat who thinks he's a little matador, and his mom's like, no, you're a cat, please stop. And he's like, no, I can fight bulls and I can do whatever I want to. And it's so cute. It's just a picture book, but it is so adorable. And like that really like made me fall in love with books at like such a young age. So I definitely share that sentiment with you. Oh my God, I have to read it now, obviously.
Yeah, that sounds now great. I have to read Skippy John Jones too. Yeah.
That one's gonna be a really quick read, don't worry. Yeah. Don't amazing. Worry. Oh my goodness. All right. So tell us about, you know, Dragon Bones. We need to know. So talk to us a little bit about like your
my thought process and like how I about the book. Writing romance novels was not my first career. It's not what I was trained to do. It's not what I went to college for. I grew up on cartoons, Saturday morning cartoons and after school specials. And I was allowed to watch the public television channel, Maryland Public Television, whenever I wanted. And so those were my formative years. And one of the shows that was on Maryland Public Television was the National Geographic but the National Geographic specials. And I knew I wanted to do television. I knew I wanted to do something with like Sesame Street, or I wanted to do something with animals and documentaries. Mm-hmm. I went to school, studied television and screenwriting. Got out, one of my first jobs was working for National Geographic Television.
Wow. That's amazing. That's amazing.
And I worked with all of these amazing female producers. And I just remember them coming back from overseas and just telling me these stories. Like maybe they went to a small country and they went like into the deep of the small country. And maybe it was run by like tribesmen. And the woman's in charge, like she's the female producer, and the tribesman's talking to the cameraman, and the cameraman's looking at her like, what do you want me to do? And just stories like this, but also stories of, you know, I'd be working with crews that would be doing excavations and digging up old bones and old artifacts and just hearing these stories. It was a really wonderful place to cut my teeth with storytelling. So The Near Rivers Adventures isn't the first book that I wrote, but it was just something that was always sitting in the back of my head of what I thought a female hero, a heroine should be. And so she's really modeled off of these women that I knew in real life that would go skydiving and go on these adventures and have these love affairs. But because I love paranormal and I love fantasy, I infuse that in there. And I love mythology and folklore, and I infuse that in there. I live walking distance to the Smithsonian. If I look out my window, I can see the Pentagon. I can't actually see the Pentagon, but I know it's over there. I spend a lot of my time just walking around the Smithsonian. They call it the Mall, which is all the collection of the Smithsonian museums. And there's tons and tons of them. And I can't remember what museum that I was in. Like a lot of them just kind of meld in my mind. And I would just be looking at these artifacts and I just start making up stories about where they came from. And so all of that kind of converged into what became the Near Rivers Adventures.
Oh my God.
So the heroine was an archaeologist. She's immortal though. And she's so old that she often forgets her history. So a lot of times she's digging up old bones and old artifacts and she's like, huh, that looks familiar.
Wait, I think I signed that.
I think that's my signature. Yeah. I think I found this. I think I created this. So that was just real. That just tickled me to think about this woman who is so old. She's immortal, so she doesn't age, but she's so old. She doesn't have space in her brain for everything that she's done. Yeah. That would tickle me. I was also very interested. Like sometimes things that I don't like, things that I'm scared of, things that just I have a distaste for, my dad always told me, because I used to be like afraid.
Oh, you can tell us.
I used to be afraid of, like, when I would go into the bathroom, and if the shower curtain was closed, that would freak me out, and I'd have to
open it. I'm still afraid of that. Fair.
No, that's so fair.
And so my father would tell me things that were being afraid of the dark. My father would tell me to, you know, make friends with these things, right? So I made a whole thing with, you know, when I pulled open the shower curtain, there was a whole world behind there. Anyway.
Oh, that's my amazing. God. I love that.
I say that, though, to say that I hate love triangles.
Oh, really?
I think they're stupid. Because the explanation that someone gave to me was that in a love triangle, which is usually a heroine who can't decide between two guys, one of the guys is perfect for who she is right now, and one of the guys is perfect for who she will be. And so because I hate this trope, I've decided I'm going to study and I'm going to write it, because you got to make friends with what irritates you, right?
Oh, my goodness. I love that so much.
So that's where the love triangle in this book stems from, was, well, I hate it, so I'm going to do it.
Can I just say that I cannot tell through your writing that you hate it? I can't tell. No, I was like, oh, my God, I love this love triangle. Mm-hmm. I usually don't love triangles either. But this one, I was just like, okay, I'm really about this. I grew up
with Twilight. I ate that shit up.
No.
I actually love it.
I usually, as a reader, I'm someone who wants neither one of the guys. Like, during Twilight, yeah. I was so totally Team Charlie. I'm like, your dad is awesome.
Your dad.
I'm not going to lie, I was Team Alice, but, like, that's a whole other thing.
I was fascinated with the idea of one of the love interests basically being the villain, and the other love interest just being completely devoted. And I was like, well, who's she going to end up with? Because she's not who she needs to be yet. Mm-hmm. So, and they're both looking at her as she is right now. So that's how I started to just play with that. And it's a 5-book series for Nia.
Yes.
For figure out,
yes, we love that.
Who does she become and who's going to be perfect for her?
And we are very excited to find out.
Oh, yeah.
We are.
So at the moment, we've only read the first book, but we are obsessed, and we all immediately downloaded the second one.
Like, easily 5 stars immediately. Like, it was incredible. It was so good.
And we very rarely just, like, unilaterally agree on enjoying a book like this. Yeah. The fact that we were all like, oh my God, this was fantastic, is pretty rare for the three of us. We have very different tastes in books. Yes, is great.
For sure.
That
can
is
you
high compliment.
Describe Dragon Bones in just a few sentences?
After all that,
elevator pitch for somebody who might not have heard of it before.
Ancient immortal who thinks she might have destroyed a civilization goes to exonerate her name.
Beautiful. Ooh. That was actually really good.
Yeah.
Put her on the spot there.
You did, just shamelessly.
I know. I was like, give it to us.
And kissing.
No, that was so good. I can't believe that you don't like the love triangles, because you really cannot tell. And that's amazing. Like, there's some things that I absolutely cannot stand, and it is apparent. Okay. I cannot, like, I can't fix my face. I can't fix my attitude towards it. So the fact that you're like, I'm going to dive into this and I'm going to make it as good as I can, I love that. That's incredible.
I actually didn't think love triangle at all.
Oh, really?
Isn't that crazy?
Girl,
you
how?
I just thought, like, you're polyamorous, you know? Like, if you're alive for that long, I don't feel like you're going to settle on one person. So, like, the vibes I got, especially with her best friend being, like, one person, what? Like, nobody does that.
Yes. Oh, my God. Yes.
Amazing.
Lauren remains maybe my favorite character that I've written of all time. I loved being in her. So Nia is the main character. Mm-hmm. She meets her BFF in this book. Really, that's my love story, is the two of them who just become each other's ride or die.
Yes.
And not spoiling anything, but they are the couple
of
the world.
It's
and just everybody else has to get in line.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That was actually kind of how Gammy pitched this book to us when we did our Hear Me Out episode on it, was, yeah, there are these men, and, like, the romances are very interesting, but she's such a badass in her own right, and she's so focused on, like, what she needs to do. It's not all about the romance for her. That we were like, ooh, That's something you don't really see in books nowadays. Like, it's all about the romance. That sounds really, really interesting to us. It was one of the things that, at least for me, drew me in.
And then, like, leaning on this woman who she really didn't want anything to do with in the beginning to mm-hmm. then, at the very end of the book, seeing her, you know, oh, I'm going through a breakup and I need my girl. Like, I love that so much. Yeah. Like, that was just, I loved that dynamic. And you can really see their relationship progress throughout the book, which I was like, oh my God, I love this. I was a little skeptical because when they're going through and we're trying to figure out, like, you know, who's causing this disturbance within the dig site. At first I was thinking, oh, it's her. Like, I think it might be.
Too, yeah.
And I was like, you know, they didn't really mesh well in the beginning. So maybe it is her that's causing this. And she's just a badass best friend. And I was like, oh my God, yes, yes, this is incredible. I love it.
We all need that energy.
I know, actually. We love strong female relationships.
Yes, we do.
A lot of that in my book. So yay, you're in the right place.
Oh, we're so excited. I actually was just on your website long ago and I saw that it's featured. I can't remember the name of it, but it was your like fantasy series with like shifters and it had a bunch of different protagonists throughout each book and it was like shifters and fae and all these things and I'm like, oh, I need to pick those up.
Oh, you're talking about Lunaterra.
Yes, so that's what it was. Yeah.
So I teamed up because that is my trope. I teamed up with other sassy, amazing romance author, fantasy romance authors, and we created a world.
I love that. It's a
great world called Lunaterra. And yeah, I've got two books in that, The Beastly Crown, which is a Beauty and the Beast retelling. And my tagline for that is, if you watched Beauty and the Beast as a child and you were disappointed when the Beast transformed into Prince Eric, this is the book for you.
Because yes, she's seen
and
me.
She will bang the Beast.
That's a cool book.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds my so great. God, yeah. I'm love so that. Here for that.
Yes. Yes, that's so that is out. And then there's 13 books and the majority of them are written by different authors. I wrote two in the world and another friend of mine wrote two in the world because we just couldn't get enough. But yeah, it's all stories, not necessarily Beauty and the Beast stories, but it's all stories like that where high adventure, high conflict and love rules.
Oh, that's so cool. Do you mind if I ask you a little bit more about that project?
Sure.
So how did that start? I'm a huge D&D nerd. I love the idea of, like, I've built worlds with my D&D care, like my friends who play D&D with me before. How did that kind of start? How did that process go?
It started because my word of the year last year was community because, you know, we were shortly getting out of COVID and, you know, we're all it's just by ourselves. I was like, I need to remember how to be a human being. Yeah. In community. So it was community and I started just working with other authors and I remembered how much I love, because again, I come from television where you need a crew. You can't do TV by yourself. You can't do film by yourself. And I missed that. I missed working in a team. So it had been community. And this year it's sisterhood because I specifically wanted to work with women.
Yes.
And so I just put out feelers. I just started asking people. I said, hey, I have this idea. I want to make a world. Do you want to come and do it with me? And almost everybody said yes, or girl, I do, but I can't this year. Invite me again. Those were the responses that I got. And the 12 of us, I always have to kill because there's 13 books, but there's actually not that many authors. 10 of us. The 10 of us, we got together and we created this world. 11. I can count, I swear. The 11 of us, we got together and we just worked it out. So we figured out what threads we would all have in common. And a lot of us even went above and beyond that. And we just started to just have conversations like, well, my character's going to go down this road. Your character's going to go down that road. They should meet and they should have a girlfriend moment. And
that's amazing.
And they go on about their way. So it became this beautiful thing. And the majority of the books, this is in romanticy. Because we know romanticy is having its day right now.
Yeah, for sure.
So one of the things we wanted to, because we were releasing these books one a week, and so they're shorter. The longest book might be 40K. So we wanted to make it enough so that people could read it in a sitting or 2 days. And so, and also so that every week we are all lifting each other up. And the majority of the books have hit number one in the short fantasy category.
That's incredible. Oh my God. We have to dive into that world. Oh, like, yeah. We have to. That's like right up our alley. Cool
project. I'm so obsessed with
that. Oh my God. I love this. That's incredible. Yeah. And I don't think many, like, you have so many books out there in different genres that follow like a romance theme. And I don't know if I would have known that after having this conversation. You know what I mean? I feel like this is amazing and something that I definitely want to support. And I know many people that would absolutely love to support that vision that you have. And that's just so incredible that you are able to do that with badass women on top of it. Are you kidding me? Love.
That's badass in order to enter the world. Yes. Yeah.
I love it.
Requirements.
Badass. No requirements.
Awesome. I love that so much.
So I feel like that leads nicely into talking about your writing process a little bit. So you've mentioned a couple times that your background does include screenwriting and teaching. Mm-hmm. So how have those experiences influenced your novel writing?
So very much. When I came to, because I've always been a reader, that was a treat. I think my aunt has pictures of taking us, my aunt who is the youngest girl and would take all of her siblings' children. Like she would take us like little ducklings to the library and like walking us in a little line. It was so cute.
I love that.
And so I like have memories of that, but also I started reading romance novels around the age of 12, but it was like the Harlequin Presents, you know, there was just waves were crashing, you know,
I got you. Yeah.
Quivering member.
Yeah.
So I've been a reader for a very long time. I knew I wanted to be involved in story. I just wasn't sure how. I thought it was television. And I did television for a number of years. And I think at some point being in a group, I wanted to do like a solo project, which is when when I wrote my first novel, is when I needed to do a solo project. And that I got bit by the bug. Screenwriting showed me how stories are structured. It taught me a lot of tactics on how, because you know, with the television screen, you're contending with hundreds of other channels. You have to deal with episodes. So you get a show, the story doesn't finish. You have to wait 7 days for the next story to come. Sometimes you have to wait the summer. Sometimes you have to wait a year. In case of Britain, you might have to wait a couple of years. Right.
Right.
So I learned all these tactics on how to deal with those issues, but in a book. So I know some tactics I can use when I get to the end of a chapter, how to make you turn that page.
Mm.
I know tactics, like when I get to the end of a book, the end of an episode, I know how to plant questions, that some of which I answer, some of which I don't. And maybe a question that I ask at the end to get you to purchase the next book. Mm. So a lot of the tactics and strategies that I learned in episodic television, I employ ruthlessly in my books to keep the pages turning and to keep people one clicking. So that's how I use screenwriting in terms of my books and how to get my audience, how to hold them there.
I love that strategy, actually.
It like, definitely that is, works.
Yeah, it does. That is such a strength that I don't think many writers have. And that's absolutely incredible that you're able to use that. That's so cool. Yeah.
We won't name names, but there's definitely some pacing issues in a lot of contemporary fantasy that we've been reading lately. And like, you know, it's a little bit of a drag until you get to that last 10%. I never felt that way reading your books. Like they were very,
thank
you, whole time. I'm like, okay, what's going to happen? I actually like almost smacked my boyfriend when we were on a plane lately because I was close to the end of your book. And he was like, but you promised we'd watch Ted Lasso. And I'm like, you gotta leave me alone.
I won out against Ted Lasso. What?
Yeah. Yeah. I was like,
she's like, what an honor.
Oh my God.
I'm done. Interview's over. I'm good.
Done. Love you so much, girlfriend. Bye. See you next time.
Amazing.
Oh my God.
Thank you. Thank you.
Love that. Oh my goodness gracious. So, what does your writing routine look like? How do you sit down and say, okay, you have to do it? Like, I have to chug through these pages. What does it look like for you?
I had my Clifton Strengths done a number of years ago. It was a fad in the author community that just became something that really a lot of indie authors and traditionally published authors have just really used to kind of gamify themselves. It's getting their Clifton Strengths done and then taking a course called Write Better Faster, which shows you how to use your strengths to write better, faster. My number one strength is discipline. my number two strength is achiever, and then I can't remember after that. It all becomes a muddle because I was taught how to use those two strengths to my advantage. I like doing the same thing over and over again. However, because I have a number two achiever, I need to advance. So do the same thing, but level up. Do the same thing, but level up. So what that translates for me is I get up every morning. I'm sitting at my desk and I'm writing at 8 a.m. every day. Well, not every day, Monday through Thursday. I at some point, maybe about 3 years ago, I gave myself Fridays off. You might not see the air quotes.
Oh, we see it.
So Monday through Thursday, 8 a.m. to like 11:30 a.m., I'm writing. I write the words, period. That's what I do. Or I'm plotting the words, or I'm revising the words. Something, okay. But is in the chair. After that, I have some choices. A lot of times on some days I'll have meetings. Maybe I'm meeting with a PA. Maybe I'm meeting with other authors. Maybe I'm meeting with merchandisers, like meeting with like Barnes & Noble or something to talk about my books, or meeting with Amazon to talk about stuff. And then Friday is my admin day. So I'm making social media posts. I'm doing things for ads or print books need to be done. If I have to worry with translations, this is my admin day where I get to turn off the creative brain and use, the other side of my brain. But that's what my writing looks like. And then after that, I'm allowed, like sometimes I have extra energy. Sometimes I'm really excited. Like I have a new project. I went on a reading cruise a couple of weeks ago.
Oh my God.
A reading cruise is a regular cruise. I had my head in the Kindle the whole time because I had been on the cruise before.
She's like, this is a thing that I invented.
Well, my dad was, I bought a cruise for my dad's birthday and then he got sick.
Oh,
so no. I was like, that's fine. But it was a cruise that I had been on.
Okay.
And so I was like, well, I've already seen all this stuff, which is great. It was a cruise to the Bahamas. I was like, well, I've seen the Nassau port. And I like to go on walking tours wherever I go because I like for somebody to tell me the story of the place.
Uh-huh.
So like, well, I've already done the walking tour. I've already done this, I've already done that. But there's all these books on my Kindle that I haven't read. So I sat on the cruise deck and just read.
Oh my God.
We should do that.
Why haven't we done that? Wait a second.
You should do that. Someone's feeding you. So you can go get a cocktail.
Oh my God.
Let's do it. Do it. So, my point was, I went on that cruise, and while I was on that cruise, it just completely refilled my well. And so I had all these new ideas that I just want to play around with. And so once it's non-negotiable, that 8 to 12, that's non-negotiable. That's writing time. Everybody knows, don't talk to me. After that, it depends. My days get a little bit more fluid. But I don't have to write. But there are times when I want to write. And the ideas that I came up with on that cruise, I want to write. So after I get off with you guys, and I need to do a scene change. So after I get off with you guys, I'm probably going to go out, either sit at the pool or go sit in a coffee shop and then just write some more. Because that it doesn't feel like work. One, because I've changed my location. But two, because I'm working on something that doesn't have a deadline. But that's what my days look like.
Okay.
That's awesome.
Wow.
I was going to ask too, like, how does the routine of having to do it every day, like, does it ever, I wouldn't say diminish your work, but like your drive to do it? Do you ever feel like, oh my God, like I have to do this? Cause you know, when you schedule something out in your head, it's like, if you don't do it, it's in your head the whole time. But sometimes the consistency of doing it over and over is just like, what am I doing?
Monotonous. Yeah.
I am both blessed and cursed to be wired the way that I am with number one discipline that I like doing the same thing. I like eating the same thing over and over again. I have habits where I need to turn on, like, if there used to be an app called Coffeetivity and now they're on YouTube, I need to have the Coffeetivity. And it has to be, there's like four, if you were to look up Coffeetivity on YouTube, there's four videos. There's the morning, the afternoon, something, and then like a 35-minute one, and it has to be the morning one. I know, my brain knows the difference of the sound people are making. And Coffeetivity, it's just coffee sounds. It's just people in a coffee shop. You can't make out what they're saying. It's just like a murmur, right?
Okay.
But I know when the afternoon one is on and it's the morning. So my brain likes that monotony.
Okay.
When it has that monotony, it allows me to be creative. because it's not going to get any surprises. Everything is the way that it should be. And it's almost like, you know how we have fight or flight? Mm-hmm. Well, that's gone because there's nothing out of the ordinary that's going to happen. So I can relax. My muse can come forward and just play. I'm safe. I'm like wrapped up in a security blanket. Mm-hmm. So for me, that works. The same thing, like when I go and I eat the same things, like I know, like if the doctor said, if you follow this diet, you're going to lose weight. Cool. Nothing's going to come out. Hopefully no chocolate gets thrown at me.
Right? Oh no. So,
that's awesome. Mm,
where did that chocolate come from?
The days when you, like you said, after this, you'll go to a coffee shop, the pool. Mm-hmm. Now do you like, does that change? Like, do you have to have that music on or does that, you know, that kind of, does it disrupt your discipline?
So the discipline, is that block. And then I'm like, go do whatever you want. And whatever I want, maybe I want to write some more. Or maybe, you know, I want to watch reruns of Supernatural right now. Ooh.
Oh,
or
my goodness.
I want to go take a long walk and listen to an audiobook. Okay, cool. So if that's the time when I ask myself, like, what do you want? I also have a habit every morning because I'm self-employed now. I've been self-employed since 2018 because of these books.
Go ahead, girl. Pat yourself on the back.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. So every morning I get up and I have a journal where I write down what I made the previous day.
Okay.
Because I need $3,000 a month. I live in Arlington, Virginia. It's a pretty pricey place, but I need $3,000 a month to pay for my life, my livelihood, for me to exist. So that's about $83 a day. So I get up in the morning, I go and I look at the KDB dashboard. How much did I make? Woohoo! I made more than $80. Bet. But I'm why? How much did I make on Barnes & Noble? How much did I make on Kobo?
Yeah.
How much did I make all these other places, right? I sell some of my books direct. How much did I make direct? Cool. And then I'm chill. I do that every morning because again, I do it. I see I got what I need. I am wrapped up in a financial safety blanket.
Yeah.
Now I can go and write the words, put the coffeetivity on, get my little journal, go into Scrivener, get my words. I'm wrapped up in that another security blanket because I've done everything that I know I can do. Now it's like, okay, I am safe. I'm financially safe. I'm creatively safe. Now what do you want? So it works for me for those reasons.
I love that.
That's amazing.
That's a great segue, actually, into this next question. You've had a lot of success in self-publishing. So what led you to choose that path?
They didn't open the door for me the other...
Oh, she said I'm going to make it happen regardless.
Yeah. Yeah. Amazing. I'm going to show you that you're wrong.
Yeah.
No, not even so much show you that you're wrong. I mean, that, you know, that is... I've been talking to friends about existential kink. There's this book that the psychologist wrote called Existential Kink, where she shows how we take pleasure in some not so nice feelings like shame or revenge or being a martyr. And so there is a little bit of that.
That's okay.
You didn't want me? Oh, you rejected me?
Oh, let me show you.
Let me show you. So there's a little bit. There's a little bit of that. But it's also, this is something that I wanted. A lot of my favorite books were being written by indies at the time, and I saw them doing it. Not only did I see them do it, they were like, girl, this is how you do it. Here are the steps. You need some other help? Indies are so open. The door is so wide open, and they're the ones holding the door open for you. Mm-hmm. So I was like, I think this is where I'm supposed to be. And I was right.
I love I that so
my
much.
Very yeah. first, my very first book, December of 2014, I made $100 that month, and I was so thrilled. Mm-hmm. And I just kept at it. And I kept making a little bit more and a little bit more and a little, and I got more readers and a little bit more readers. And I could see, remember, I have that number 2 achiever. I could see the achievements coming in. And I just saw, if I just keep at this, this will be able to take care of me. And I was right.
Wow.
That's amazing.
Oh my God. I love her so much, guys. Can she be on the podcast forever?
Yeah, you just joined. We can do support post.
Oh my goodness.
When it comes to other people who are interested in starting writing on their own, what kind of advice would you give to somebody else who's looking to self-publish their own work?
Two things. One, know your strengths. That taking the Clifton strengths, or some people like the Enneagram better, whichever, but learning your strengths, because your strengths are probably not my strengths. Like, it might drive you crazy to write every day. Well, 4 days a week for me now. There are some people that are binge writers who just get inspiration, who just will write like 20,000 words in a day. That's not me. I write a little bit every day, and I write, and I don't like to write by word count. I write by chapters. And that's something that I figured out about myself based on my strengths.
Yeah.
My brain likes to have a complete story. Like, some people will write 1,000 words, but what if I'm in the middle of a chapter? I'm not going to stop in the middle of the chapter.
Yeah.
I need to the end of that scene. So you know thyself. And one of the ways to know thyself is to take that Clifton strengths and then to go look at you can just go on YouTube. You don't have to actually take the class and look at the Write Better Faster, Becca Syme's class, Syme, S-Y-M-E. That's specifically for authors. She just takes those strengths and she talks about how this works for authors. That was the best thing, because that explained to me why I like to do the same thing over and over again. A little bit different.
Yeah.
The second thing that I would tell you is find your audience. So know thyself and then know thy audience. So if you write, like, there's this guy, Chuck Tingle. I don't know if you guys have come across any of his books. They are delightfully ridiculous. I can't even say any of the titles. Just look up Chuck Tingle.
Oh, boy.
Right?
I like the way that sounds. Hold on.
Right? Yeah. But you would think with the kind of books that he writes about, you know, like a man having a relationship with a dinosaur.
Okay.
You would think that there wouldn't be a huge audience for that.
You definitely just looked it up because I can see you giggling.
She's like, wait a second. I got to figure out the book they're talking about. I'm interested.
He's hilarious. And the books are just like, they do not take themselves seriously. And he found an audience of readers that do not take themselves seriously, that love to laugh and love. So he found that. Like, if you are writing aliens, but aliens that came from the ocean and they like cowboys and they have dinosaurs and like, that's right. You can get really niche down, but there's going to be somebody that likes that book. And then you have to be really honest with yourself. Were you hoping for at least a couple of people that liked your book? Or were you hoping for thousands and thousands of people that liked your book? Because if so, that underwater alien romance might not be it.
Yeah.
You would have to look for a bigger pond to splash around in with your books. So when you know who you are and you embrace that, you're very honest with the things that you want. And then you find people who want the thing that you are so passionate about, that's when the marriage works.
Mm.
So I have more than one pen name. You guys know my Ines pen name that writes the fantasy romance and the paranormal romance. And there is a huge audience that loves that. But then they even niche down. Like, you guys, Nia Rivers is urban fantasy romance. But then there's romanticy that we all know about. Then there is paranormal romance that's shifters. There's shifters that are rejected mate. You can niche down. So if you can do that and find the pocket of readers, and they are the size, the amount of readers that you want to meet your financial goals, that's key. Those are the first two things that I would do.
Wow.
Awesome. So you mentioned your pen names. So how do you like manage and differentiate between them? Was there like a specific reason you decided to use different pen names for different genres, or what's the thought process there?
The audience.
Gotcha.
So if you have an audience that wants that dinosaur romance, and then you have an audience that wants like Fourth Wing, they are not going to read the same books. You need to separate yourself. So I look at it based upon the audience. Now, I only write romance. I'm not interested in writing anything else. And you might have some contemporary readers reading paranormal. They might do that. But one of the no-nos is you are not going to have clean and wholesome readers. That's my second pen name, Shanae Johnson, who writes clean, wholesome military romance. She's not going to read Nia River. Those readers are not going to read Nia River. They're not going to read the Luna Terra books, right?
Yeah.
Because they're spicy. The doors are wide open. Sometimes the bed is a little bit crowded. They're not going to read those books. So that's a time when the audiences were not going to cross, and I needed to keep them separate.
Okay.
I gotcha. That makes sense.
Yeah. That's actually really smart, too.
Yeah.
And that doesn't really, like, tie you down to one specific niche. You know what I mean? Like, it, she's allowed to go through as many genres and niches that she really wants to without being, no, that's the Nia Rivers author. Like, she only writes this type. So that's actually really smart. Mm-hmm. Really, really smart.
Clever. I did not do that at first. I had to learn that.
Yeah. That's fair. Funny. That's fair. I'm sure there's been a lot of, like, trials and tribulations throughout.
That's, you know, great advice, though.
I know.
Like, upcoming authors, like, outside of know your audience.
Yeah.
Like, hey, by the way, don't make this mistake because you'll ruin it before it starts.
That's really interesting. So I know this is a little off script, but I want to talk really quickly. We're big smut lovers here. Like, no shade if that's not your thing. But, like, it's we're big fans of the spicy scenes. Your spicy scenes, at least in Dragon Bones, were so beautifully written. I feel like I read this book and I was like, this is really, really hot. But at the same time, the language that you chose to use was absolutely beautiful somehow. Like, I felt like I was reading a work of art. Can you talk about how you approach writing spicy scenes like that?
Yes.
If you're comfortable with it.
Is a pet peeve of mine because I've written over 100 books. I stopped counting.
That's impressive.
I always remember that I come from screenwriting. So I was used to writing like 13 episodes a season, sometimes two seasons a year, sometimes three, multiply, right? And I've been at this for over 10 years. So people would ask me, well, how don't you get tired of writing the spicy scenes? It's all the same. And I was like, what are you talking about? It's not insert tab A into slot B. If you do that, that is very boring description. That's all you're just describing an action. I believe that your spicy scenes should be a part of character development. Mm. For example, the best example that I can give you, if Nia was an assassin, right? And you know, there's that whole thing, especially if you love the John Cusack film where he went home for his high school reunion.
Oh, jeez.
It'll come to me in a second. It'll come to all of us in a second. Yeah. But assassin, gross point blank. And he would never sit with his back to the door.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right? Because that's like assassin 101.
Yeah.
So think about if Nia was an assassin and she was coming to a part where she was like, I'm interested in this guy. We're going to go bang. Well, if she's in the room and she's banging, she's not going to have her back to the door because the assassin part of her just isn't shut off.
Right.
She's going to be like, nope, I'm going to be on the top. I'm going to be facing the door and we're going to go.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And as she starts to trust him more and she starts to let her hair down more, the next time she's on the bottom. Maybe the time after that, maybe he has her turned towards the window. He's taking her from the back. And that's just all like the sexual position, the placement, but it becomes a part of the character development before we even describe the actual act. And so that's how I think about my sex scenes. Like, where are they? What are they doing? Where are they? There's a level of intimacy. Where are they on the levels of intimacy? Are they just touching hands? Does he touch her face? Are they kissing yet? Where are they kissing? So I'm looking at things like that. It becomes a whole part of the character arc. And if it is not, it is absolutely skippable. I don't want you to skip any part of my book.
Yeah.
So I'm going to make sure that every word, every scene is going to be crucial to the plot, including the banging scenes.
Wow.
That
was amazing.
Cool.
Yeah, I love that you think like that. That's incredible.
Too, that's a good description for a lot of big books that we've seen that got really big, and everybody loved like the sex scenes and they blew up, but there was a reason we loved them in the beginning, and then the series go on and it's just like, that's it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, once people highlighted that part of the book, that was all it was, but you lose the plot.
Yeah.
When it doesn't matter to the characters, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it has to matter to the plot, but it has to matter to your characters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's really important, like, to keep that in your head, because a lot of authors don't.
They don't. Yeah, I know. This is the first time that I've, like, wow.
I haven't heard a phrase that way before. It's really interesting.
That's so incredible. Do you have any, like, sexy scene pet peeves? Does anything, like, certain words or phrases just take you out of it and you're like, God, no?
Well, I don't understand all the hate against Moist.
Okay.
I don't either.
I don't get it either.
Oh, we'll talk about you.
Okay.
Gammy has, like, 6 trigger words that if you say them, she's like, I'm out. It's over. We're done.
Okay. God, this isn't about me. This is about her.
I will say rape is very hard for me. especially if it's early in the book, when it's really early and you haven't shown me that you as an author, or he, because I'm assuming it's the guy, sorry, or he as the hero, understand consent, I have a hard time trusting you to go through the rest of the book. If you take me through a book, like the book that I just wrote the end today, it needs a little bit of a revision, but I wrote the end today. And in this tale, the hero is a commoner. The heroine is she's a queen. And she loves this commoner. She will never tell him that she loves him. And the reason that she wants to be with him is because when she's with him, he makes her forget all of her responsibilities. He's so good at tending to her sexual needs and her other needs that he doesn't even have to ask her. She just will drop to her knees and like, what do you want me to do? Mm-hmm. This man was angry at her. He pressed a knife to her neck. He was on orders to kill her. Oh. And she's like, is that what you want? Okay. If this is what bring you.
Because, I like this for people who try to write BDSM. Understand the relationship. Right?
So she gave over complete control because she trusted him so completely because he proved to her, I know better than you how to press your buttons and please you. And so, I'm not telling you the name of this book so that if you do decide to read it, you won't know that it's happening. But so, when I got to the end today and I was trying to figure out how do I end this, it was that she still can't say I love you. She's just too into her own head. She can't do it. But what he realizes is what she needs is for him to let go of the control of her. Meaning, he always holds her down and she loves it. She's always like, this is exactly what I want. I don't want to be able to move. I want you to be in charge of everything. You give me the orgasm. You give me everything. And he slowly starts to let go of one hand. And she's like, wait, what are you doing? And he lets go of the other hand. And she's like, no, don't do this. I really wanted to play with consent. And he is making love to her slowly. And she's like in tears because she's like, you are destroying me. You are ruining me because you're not being rough with me. You're showing me what love is physically. And now I'm going to have to admit to you that I love you too. And I had the best time writing that because in my head, I'm thinking he has been rough with her the whole time. But you, when you're in your head, you know, and when you're in his head, you know that this is what she needs. She can't enjoy it. And she does not want to be in charge. She wants to just let everything go. And then at the end, he's like, no, you can't do that anymore. You're going to have to hold on to me now.
So when does that come out? It's
putting it on the calendar.
It's currently June 10th. So.
No, sorry, that's not coming out for a while.
Fine, we'll be waiting
for it.
Can't just do that to us and then.
Okay.
God, oh my God.
That sounds incredible.
But that's my point. Like that's what I feel like when people are go on about sex scenes and spice and there was no plot in this book. I'm like, then what were you reading?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
It should be a part of the story.
That's fair. Oh my God.
Yeah, if we're all just like waiting for that book now.
I know, like, wait a second. Wait.
I'll let you guys know when it's ready.
Yeah, thank you. I'm like, I have to move on from that. Oh God. So other than just talking about that book right now, Jesus, what marketing strategies have you found most effective in reaching your readers?
So remember I said, make sure you know who your reader are, because once you know who they are, then you should be able to find them. So a lot of my readers are 30 plus.
Okay.
A lot of them, with Shanae, my sweet pen name, a lot of them live in the Midwest.
Mm.
So that tells me like when I should send my newsletters. That tells me that a lot of these women are probably going to be on Facebook. It tells me a lot of these women are probably watching things like the Home Garden HGTV.
Mm.
Right. So that starts to tell you things like that. So knowing that, I know to be on Facebook looking for these women. I know to, when I'm running my Facebook ads or my Instagram ads, I know to target because I can target HGTV and other channels like that. I can target certain authors who write books like I do. So once you understand your demographics, then this comes from television too, then you start to understand psychographics, which is what are these people in this demographic? What are they doing? What's their lifestyle like? And that can help you to, that will give you the clues to figure out where you can go and find them and talk to them.
Nice. That's very cool. It makes so much sense. Like, you figure out your demographic of what your readers are, and then you go where they are.
Surprise.
Yeah.
Brilliant. I don't know. It's literally brilliant. I love it.
So, what's a book you've recently read and loved?
Oh, I came prepared for this. I keep a
Yes. Yes.
You love show and tell.
I don't know if I'm going to show, but I keep a reading journal. And what I don't read a lot of contemporary.
Okay.
I don't. But I was studying the hidden, and I study tropes. I was studying the hidden identity trope. Mm. And I fell on, I can't remember, which book was it? Okay, I fell on Vi Keelan and Penelope Ward's Dirty Letters.
Right?
Oh, we just saw that at Kiss and Tell not long ago.
Yeah. Okay.
Really good. So I read that. It was epistolary, which I love too. I love an epistolary. Mm-hmm. And it was a hidden identity, where they were pen pals, and then they find each other again later, and their lives are very different. And one of them is hiding they knew who they were as children, but now this guy, you'll find out it was the guy. He has a new identity that he does not want her to know. Ooh. And I'm just now on a Vi Keeling and Penelope Ward.
Okay, I love this journal. Sharing
their stuff.
Your reading journal is so cute. We're obsessed. All three of us have very different versions of how we keep, like, yes. A reading journal. Yes, keep yes, one. Yes, yeah.
I don't.
No, she doesn't. There's the not keeping one.
She does not. It's in her head.
Yeah.
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 No, it's on her phone and her Kindle app.
Yeah.
Nice.
You know, the ones that disappear after you borrow 20 titles.
Yeah.
You're ashamed of them a little.
You gotta hide them a little bit. It's fine. Everything's fine.
Yes.
So when you're writing and you're trying to, you know, set the mood, get comfortable, do you have favorite, like, drinks and snacks to kind of keep you cozy?
I don't. I will usually have a cup of tea in the morning when I'm writing. I just started a 75 hard challenge. I'm calling it a heroin challenge.
Okay.
And so one of the things that you're supposed to do on that is you're supposed to drink a gallon. I'm not going to get through a gallon. I struggle enough getting through half a gallon. But you're supposed to drink a gallon of water. And so right now I've had to replace my tea with water.
Oh my goodness. Kind of sad. I know. I feel for you.
Someone did say that I could just take the water from the tea and that still counts because it's just tea.
It is.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's water. Just water with right. tea. Yeah.
That's really what coffee is.
Right?
Water.
So,
beans. Water and beans.
So that's what I've done. No, that's really it. It's usually I like to have a cup of tea near me when I'm writing, but I'm trying really hard to stop snacking.
Yeah.
Unless somebody throws chocolate at me.
Yeah.
Me too. Let me know if you figure that out because I haven't.
No, it's unfair.
If you could have dinner with any fictional character, who would it be?
That was a really hard one because I would love the three male characters that I talked about. I would just want to listen to them talk. I don't want to say anything. I just want to sit there and listen. So like Reese Witherspoon, Vlad Tepish, and Dragos Kulibra, yeah, they were all just sitting around a table talking about whatever they wanted to talk about. I just want to sit there and take notes.
I'm just listening.
Ooh, I love the idea of not just having dinner with your favorite character, but having all your favorite characters together at dinner and just like letting yeah. that interaction just like, happen. Oh, God.
That's
awesome.
I love that.
Mm-hmm.
So is there anything other than the book you just finished that we should look forward to? Any upcoming projects?
For me?
Yeah. Yeah.
Definitely two things. Look for the Lunaterra Chronicles, the Beastly Crown one, the one where she bangs the beast. I'm so proud of that.
Yes.
That is already out. And then I have I wrote two books in that series. So The Beautiful Blade is childhood friends turned lovers. And it's a bit of a Beauty and the Beast as well. The hero who you meet in The Beastly Crown, he has a prosthetic arm, and you learn why he has that prosthetic arm in the second book. And in the first book, the beast was supposed to marry a fairy princess.
Okay.
And that fairy princess, because I love Shonda Rhimes, and I loved love Bridgerton.
Yep.
And more than that, I loved Queen Charlotte, and when she was trying to go over the wall, and this is how my ideas come. I'm like, what if she went over that wall? Yeah. And that was, that coupled with what if the beast never didn't change back? Those were my two ideas. Okay. But they have in two different books. So Banging the Beast happens in Beastly Crown. And what if Princess Charlotte actually went over the wall? Happens in the second book, but she goes over, the fairy princess goes over the wall because she was in love with her servant and she did not want to marry the beast. So those are those two books. So those, that the second one comes out mid-June. Then the next thing that's coming out, one which contains that scene that we just talked about, that sex scene that we just talked about, yeah, is the Wicked Evermore series.
Okay.
So I love fairy tales. Yeah. I love mythology. I love folklore. And a lot of the stories, my stories, you will see some kind of fairy tale retelling in there. In Wicked Evermore, I flipped the fairy tales. And it's the princesses that were the villains. Oh. The villains are the heroines. So I retold Maleficent's story. And Princess Aurora is the bad guy. I retold Ursula's story. Ursula pretends to be Ariel and snags Prince Eric. And I just finished retelling the Snow Queen story.
Oh my God. These are so interesting. Oh my God. Yes.
Such cool premises.
Yes.
Those are coming out. I'm going to do a Kickstarter first because I really love what Kickstarter allows us to do. It allows us to make these beautiful books that we just can't sell on Amazon. Mm-hmm. I also, the very last Kickstarter that I did last month, it dealt with, there was a lot of rope bondage in the books because I love playing with BDSM.
Yeah.
It dealt with a lot of rope bondage in the books. And I also live in a place that's very liberal. So there is a BDSM club in Washington, D.C. that has a lot of community outreach. And like 3 times a month, they have rope class where they come in. You come in, they show you how to tie, they will tie you up.
Nice.
Awesome. So I learned all these rope ties. I met these amazing tires and bottoms. And one of them was like, I'll teach a class for you. So me and my readers, we got on a Zoom together and she taught us how to tie corsets and how to tie our arms. Wonderful. And it was lovely. That's but so I can't cool. do that on like Amazon or Barnes & Noble, right?
Yeah.
But I can do that with a Kickstarter. I can offer all these other things with Kickstarter. So I did that with my Dark Vintage series, which was spicy vampire romance where the heroes like to tie their women up. And I'm going to do something similar with Wicked Evermore. I'm going to launch it on Kickstarter first, and then I'm going to launch the books.
Oh my God.
That's amazing.
That is so cool. And you really get to like talk with your readers and like bond with them. That's like an experience that not many readers get to have. So that's incredible. I absolutely would have done that. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, dude, we're there. Let us know. We definitely need the link for that Kickstarter.
Oh my God, that's incredible. That is so cool.
Yes. Absolutely. Alrighty, I think we're getting close to the end. So would you like to share how your fans can stay connected with you and your work for listeners on the podcast?
Sure. Just come on over to my website, AnessaWrites.com, but you will find me. Whenever I'm doing any type of challenges, especially like this 75 heroin, I usually blog about it on Instagram or sometimes TikTok. So you can find me, AnessaWrites. I'm the only one. And those are the best ways. If you are interested in that Kickstarter, I think it is, what is it? but if you looked up Wicked Evermore, you would see it. But okay. It is Wicked Kickstarter. It's AnessaWrites.com/Wicked Kickstarter so that you can be notified when it launches. Because what I like to do is the first one I launched on my birthday. So you got it at a price that you would never get it at any other place. So probably do something similar. So you will get the first three books. I just put the finishing touches on the last book today. The first two audiobooks are done. Once I get this third book nice and tidy, I'm going to have all the audiobooks ready. I'm going to have the special edition with the beautiful sprayed edges and probably artwork inside the book. Because I really enjoy doing that.
Oh, yeah.
I'll have that done. Again, we had so much fun with that rope tying expert. I'm going to figure out how to do something like that again, because it was so much. It was so informative. They basically taught us one tie and then showed us how to use it in all. They showed us how to tie it as a corset, how to tie it as like a harness that you could like, you could hook yourself into something. And then you could basically, it was amazing. AnessaWrites.com/Wicked Kickstarter is that if you want to just follow along so that you'll know exactly when that launches and be able to take advantage of any early bird specials that I do. But those are the best places to find me.
Awesome. And we can add those links into the show notes, too.
So everything she just mentioned will be down below.
Absolutely.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast today and talking with us. We had so much fun talking with you.
That was amazing. You're incredible. Actually, I'm like in awe of you. Like, I am just, I'm so obsessed with you, especially like after talking to you and really getting to know your process. I actually think that you are an incredible writer, and I'm so lucky to have read your book, and I cannot wait to continue the series and to also find more that I love. And I am so thankful that I get to support you. This was amazing. I had so much fun.
So happy that I got to talk to you guys. I'm so happy that you came over to my table and talked to me.
Yeah, absolutely. Happy I got to talk
to you. You're actually the reason that we came over, because Gammy and I were like awkwardly signed eyeing you guys like,
It's like, I don't know. Like,
are those authors over there? And you're like,
should we come over?
Come over.
You're come like, come on, girls. I see you.
You guys like romance? Come on.
Yeah.
We're like, okay.
For sure. For sure. And you, your book definitely was top notch for us.
Oh, yeah. So. We're obsessed.
Thank you so much.
Of course.
Alrighty, guys. Make sure that you guys check out Dragon Bones and the rest of Inez's works. And you can find her at InezWrites.com. Yeah,
we'll see you on the next one, guys. Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Don't make me dance to a tune that you're humming. No, my body don't move like that. Don't make me pretend.
Alrighty, that's a wrap on our first ever author interview episode. And what a ride it was. A massive thank you to the amazing Inez Johnson for joining us and making this one of the most fun episodes we have ever recorded. Truly, this conversation is exactly what we dreamed of when we started Overbooked and Opinionated. Talking books, craft, and everything in between with brilliant storytellers like her. If you enjoyed the episode, please consider giving us a rating, sharing the pod with your bookish besties, and helping us grow this chaotic little book club of ours. All right, tell us, who's your favorite morally messy heroine? Or which of Inez's upcoming projects are you most excited to check out? Come tell us over on socials. Speaking of which, you can stay connected with us on Instagram at overbooked.opinionated. We are on TikTok at overbookedopinion. We are on Facebook at overbookedandopinionated. And our website is overbookedandopinionated.com. Finally, you can join our book club on Fable. We are overbooked and opinionated. We're always posting updates. And all three of us have our own profiles where we share what we're currently reading. And as always, may your immortal love interest be emotionally available, your storylines tangled in epic stakes and steamy tension, and may none of your enemies be nearly as charming as Trace. Catch you next time, book nerds.